listening to Sherpa Legends, a presentation of the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 4 of Sherpa Legends.
Conversations with men and women who have achieved legendary status in youth ministry. Matthew, how are you, my friend?
I am doing all right this fine day.
That's cool. So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What were you doing in 1989?
Oh, 1989. That's
testing the memory banks.
That's in recessed memory. Suppressed memory, actually. Actually, I was a sophomore in college at the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, Illinois.
Okay.
What about you?
I was, I'd been married about a year, and I was just starting my first ever endeavor as a volunteer in youth ministry by the end of 1989.
Wow.
Yeah. What do you think you were wearing back then?
Well, I hate to admit it, but I did own a pair of bib overalls at that time of my life, and really? Wore them on more than one occasion.
Did you wear a t-shirt under it, or did you go with the bare shoulder look?
You know, I wore a t-shirt. I mean, who do you think I am, Steve? Yes, I wore a t-shirt under it.
Well, you owned a pair of bib overalls. What? So
well,
I don't know
true.
What else could be said
that's
about
true. That. That's true. What about for you in 89? Oh, what was the wear of fare for you?
Yeah. Maybe Levi's 501.
Were you a jean jacket guy? I feel like you were a jean jacket guy.
Yeah, I had a jean jacket.
I knew that. I just knew that about you.
Hey, man, that was cool.
That was all the rage.
You know what else was all the rage in 1989?
The Center for Parent and Youth Understanding.
I don't know if it was the rage yet, but it was getting started in 1989.
That's right.
CPYU.org, one of the great organizations out there in youth ministry.
Absolutely. Our good friend Walt Mueller getting CPYU off the ground in 1989, about to celebrate their 30th anniversary.
It's amazing. As we thought about talking with Walt, and we're going to share that interview with you in just a second, you know, it's really amazing how the life of CPYU is kind of paralleled our life in youth ministry.
Yeah, absolutely. We both came on the scene about that time, and so did he, and so it was an absolutely fascinating conversation.
Yeah. So we got a chance to interview the great Walt Mueller from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. We've become friends over the past year or so, and he has a lot of great insight to share with us about getting this ministry started, its impact on youth ministry, and what he's learned about youth culture and engaging with that as youth workers.
So enjoy our conversation with Walt Mueller.
Well, we are here live with Walt Mueller, Dr. Walt Mueller from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, all the way from Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania. Walt, thanks for being on our show today.
Hey, thanks. You guys have the best stickers in the podcast world.
that's high praise.
When I was down there at Steve's church, we picked up a bunch of them, and they're sitting all over the place. And yesterday, my 5-year-old grandson found one. Sorry to say it wasn't on the refrigerator. It was in a door. Pulled it out, looked at you two guys and just said, that is cool.
Wow.
Wow.
We've passed the 5-year-old cool test.
You did.
Impressive.
That's very impressive. Who knew that?
Talking about. So, yeah, no, that's what he did. I'm not joking. He pulled that out and goes, what's this? This is cool. That is cool.
You know, what's really important in the podcast world is not content or anything else. It's stickers.
That's exactly right. That's all youth workers want is stickers.
Yep. Yeah. We got the llama going for us, and it's working.
It is.
So you guys are coming up on your 30th anniversary with CPYU. Is that correct?
Yep. Yes, sir. So July 23rd, I believe, of this year, it'll be 30 years since we sat in a room in a Presbyterian church in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, just north of Philadelphia, sat with about, I don't know, it was 10 or 11 friends. And they agreed to be on a board, and they got everything rolling and got it started. So, yeah, we're seeing this as our 30th year. We're going to do some special things this year. We're going to do some special things next year as well to celebrate. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing in some respects. And I usually don't stop and think about it until we have like an evening with our donors. And then it's just overwhelming. Yeah, I mean, you guys know how it is. You just get buried in what you're doing. And sometimes you don't really pause to appreciate maybe what God's doing. And so I'm excited about that. Over the next few weeks, we're going to gather with our donors and celebrate.
Does it seem like 30 years?
No, it doesn't. I don't know how to explain it other than to people who are younger. You know, I remember people saying to me, you're gonna blink and you're going to open your eyes and all these years will have passed. And I thought, I didn't agree with that. Because in your younger time, really, time goes a lot slower, I think. Especially, like, I remember being a kid and waiting, you know, in the summertime on the curb for the ice cream truck to come by. And it just seemed like forever. And now, you know, a year just goes by. I can't believe it. So it's a flash. Yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, what the scriptures say is true. It's really become real to me that our days are like the wind or like the grass or like the flower that fades. It says that in a number of places. And so for me, you know, I turned 63. I will turn 63 this summer. More and more every day, I want to make the most of it. You know, I don't know how much time. You get to the point where it's not that I'm expecting to die anytime soon, but I don't know. You know, your time's limited, so you want to make the most of it. And I wish I had done that more when I was younger, especially in youth ministry.
Well, speaking of when you were younger in youth ministry, how did this all start for you? Like, did you have a background in youth ministry? Did you grow up in, you know, a youth group or anything?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I love hearing people's stories about this. I don't know if mine is that compelling, but I grew up in a pastor's home, the oldest of three boys, and we were in a church outside of Philadelphia. When I was in ninth grade, starting high school, my dad, this was 1970. So, you know, think about this. It was like right around the time that Wayne Rice and Mike Iaconelli started Youth Specialties. Youth ministry was starting to blossom, you know, sprout and blossom a little bit. And he caught a vision for that. There were a lot of teenagers in our church. And he went over to Princeton Theological Seminary and interviewed some people who might want like a weekend field education job. And he got a guy named, this was the fall of 1970, a guy named Phil Douglas, who was from Tennessee, young guy, recent college graduate, first or second year in seminary, brought him over. And this guy just lit it up for us in terms of relating to us, and to have this older guy who we just thought was cool and was spending time with us and showing up and going to football games with us and talking to us about Christ. That had quite a profound effect on my life. And over the course of the next 3 years of my high school experience, he had two other guys come in from Princeton as well, who had played an equally significant role in my life. And I think faith became important to me at that point in my life. And I decided I was going to go off to college and I wanted to come out and work with kids. So I majored in sociology. Youth ministry was not on the map at that point. But long story short, I went to Geneva College, a Christian college in Western Pennsylvania, came out from that. And through a strange, strange series of circumstances and a guy who was discipling me, bugging the living daylights out of me to interview for a ministry job with an organization called the Coalition for Christian Outreach. I agreed to do the interview just to get him off my back, and was planning to go work at a Christian boys' home with delinquent boys.
That's a Pittsburgh-based organization.
Yeah. And they've actually expanded beyond that regional area there. They were about 200 miles radius of Pittsburgh. That's right. You'd know that because you're a Steelers fan, aren't you?
I am. I went to Grove City.
Yeah. Well, Grove City's okay. That Steeler thing, that's a pathology that needs to be fixed. So I went to work with the CCO out there and did both campus ministry on the campus of the University of Pittsburgh at Johnstown. And they had placed me in a local church where I spent half my time doing youth ministry. And of course, half time at that point in time was 40 hours. Because you're doing 80 hours a week, which is, I guess you can do that when you're single. I seem to be okay with that back then. And that's how I got started in youth ministry. That just grew into a call to do this full time.
How long did you do that?
Well, I was with a CCO for 3 years. And I'll tell you, towards the end of that time in working, I knew I wanted to go into youth ministry, middle school and high school ministry full time. And I'll tell you, this is something I would say to younger youth workers, you know, think about what your weaknesses and your liabilities are. I think a lot of us, we get into youth ministry and we just have those natural gifts at being able to relate to kids, loving to spend time with students, you know, maybe leading a Bible study. But for me, what I saw as a deficiency, and it took a while for me to see this, was, you know, just my ability to do ministry in terms of Bible study content, that sort of thing. So I really sensed a call then to go off to seminary. And what I did, we, Lisa and I got married, and we immediately went off to Massachusetts to Gordon Conwell Seminary, where we basically hunkered down for 3 years. And I focused on biblical studies and theology, which, man, if I could just grab every youth worker right now, every young youth worker, especially now, because there's so much confusion out there, I would say, do that. It's a tremendous investment. Seminary is phenomenal. And I would say, I would also recommend, and I feel pretty strongly about this, do it in the context of community. Step back from what you're doing and just immerse yourself in it, which I really try to push people away from online education. I just don't know that that's the most effective way. I think you can get a degree fast. I think you can get a degree fairly inexpensively doing that. But there's nothing like, you know, Duffy Robinson and I were talking about this last week. We were together for the week, just how residential education, we wouldn't trade our experience, the experience that both of us had at separate times up there at Gordon Conwell. We wouldn't trade it for anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably the best thing I've done in ministry all along, just to make that decision to get trained. So I did that. Then I came back out and back into local church youth ministry. And that's when everything really started to change for me. So,
yeah, that's part of my story too. Going to seminary at 32, spending 3 years immersed in that.
Yeah. So let me ask you, would you, with that, you know, what would you say to a youth worker now? I'm curious if you would say the same thing I would in terms of residential, you know, immersion.
Yeah. It's very difficult because it's financially constraining. And I understand that it's not always possible. We were blessed to be in a position to be able to do it.
Yeah.
I have an intern right now who's doing it online, really for that reason. So, yeah, it's the best case scenario, but I'm not sure it's always possible. But yeah, it was definitely something I've never regretted doing.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, if anybody's listening who's not in youth ministry, and I'm guessing you probably have millions of listeners who are not in youth ministry.
Tens of listeners.
Oh, tens of millions. I'm sorry. But, you know, for those people there, I always like to think of it this way. You know, someone once said that in the kingdom, there are senders and there are the sent. And I think people in youth ministry are like missionaries. You know, we're the sent, we're called, we're sent. Hmm. But there are people who have tremendous financial resources and gifts, and to fund an education for somebody is really a noble, noble thing to do. And it's a great investment to make in the kingdom. So, you know, anybody who's listening, who's a sender, and, you know, there may be some youth workers listening who are millionaires. You could fund someone else too.
Well, I think about 10% of youth pastors are actually millionaires, statistically speaking.
Self-made millionaires.
Yeah. They're only California, right?
Yeah. Well, they make all their money off DYM. That's how you become a millionaire.
That's right.
That's a horrible thing to say. Hey, hold on.
All right. So how did you get connected with the whole youth specialties crew? You know, the Duffy and the Wayne and the Mike.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's an interesting story because if I can back up, since you asked about my story, I'm just going to tell you that, you know, part of the reason why we started this 30 years ago was after seminary, I went back into local church youth ministry. At that point, really saw the importance of ministering to families and the primary role of parents in the spiritual nurture of their kids. And so we worked very hard to work with parents, and a group of parents came to me and said, we need your help. We know you're closer in age to our kids. We know you understand them. Help us understand their world. So I started to talk more regularly and, I guess, systematically in a more organized way about the things that are happening in youth culture with those parents. And it was very helpful to them. It was very helpful to my students. And that grew into a call to do what we started 30 years ago with CPYU. So from that point, in answer to your question, I was starting to write. I had a friend who latched on to what we were doing here and saw the value of it, because we didn't do any advertising. It was all, you know, just word of mouth. We just faithfully went about trying to do what we were trying to do. And about a year and a half into it, there's a fellow named Ken Canfield, who at the time was running the National Center for Fathering.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken had heard about us through a mutual friend who was heading up the Pew Foundation, who was from Philadelphia. And Ken, you know, contacted me and said, I want to hear about what you're doing. And one thing led to another there. We became friends, and he really pushed for me to write about youth culture, which resulted in the first edition of what at that point in time was called Understanding Today's Youth Culture, which frustrating to me. You know, as soon as that thing's in print, you feel like it's out of date.
Right.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, that's the downside of what we do. Thank God for the internet and technology, because we can write in real time now. And that's where most of my writing is gone. But that book wound up being done three times over. And I've got some plans for it now that I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But I'm working on that.
What year was that first edition?
I think it was 94 or 95. I still remember going and hand delivering the manuscript to Ken Canfield, who then took it to Tyndale House, who was the first publisher. Well, once that came out, the guys at YS, now I'd been involved with YS, you know, attending as a youth worker, and I knew a lot of those guys. Duffy was a buddy from 1985. We were in a youth ministry network together. I would go speak in his classes there at Eastern because I wasn't far from the school. One thing led to another, and I guess when at that point in time you get a book published, sometimes they would notice it. And they said, hey, I think it was Tick and Mike and Wayne said, hey, would you come to YS and would you speak on youth culture? So sure, it was a great opportunity, nerve-wracking in many ways, because I was used to sitting and listening to people and absorbing everything. And now I was on the other side, which was a great responsibility. But that started a history with them that just took off. And, you know, I think I've missed two of the conventions in the last 25 years or so. One was due to a family emergency, and one was due to a bicycle accident I had 9 years ago that about killed me. And I thought I could get there, but it was just too soon. And I wasn't allowed to fly for 6 months. And I wasn't going to drive to San Diego. So I skipped that one. But I will say that those guys, you know, they came after us, and I very hesitantly said yes, because I was a little nerve-wracking, but they really served well, you know, Tick, Mike, Wayne, the rest of those guys, to put us on the map. And, you know, that's where I really became buddies with this group of guys that we've had a longstanding relationship that's pretty amazing. You know, Duffy, Mark Penner, Rich Van Pelt, Chap Clark, Doug Fields. We all actually went to Africa together with our spouses with Compassion about 10 years ago now, I guess it's been. And that really cemented our friendships. And so it's been really fun to be able to engage with them and equip youth workers. We all have a passion for the truth and to equip youth workers to communicate the truth. So yeah, I don't know that that's that exciting a story.
Do you remember what the first year was that you led a seminar at YS?
It was probably about 95, you know, and I'll say this, you know, it was kind of fun. I'll tell a funny story about this. It was actually at my expense, not throwing anybody under the bus here, but they didn't pay an honorarium. They didn't pay any of my expenses. And Tyndale House picked up my flight. And so I basically went out there to speak a few times for free. And I'm going to tell on one of my friends here. We were sitting having breakfast. I was with Mark Penner, and we're having breakfast, and the check came, and I'm reaching to my wallet to start pulling cash out from my breakfast. And Marv goes, what are you doing? And I said, I'm paying for my breakfast. And he said, YS isn't paying for your breakfast? No, I didn't know they were supposed to. You know, I was naive, dumb, and I was certainly wasn't going to ask. I didn't know what they were supposed to do and what they weren't supposed to do. So Marv pulled out a credit card. It was not his credit card. At the time, a lot of those guys were traveling for YS, so they had YS credit cards. So Marv started paying for my meals.
Oh, wow.
which meant that Mike and Tick and Wayne were paying for my meals. So I probably just got Marv fired.
Yeah. A statute of limitations has probably run out on that breakfast pay.
Marv was so gracious with that. He's been such a great friend. I'll tell you, he is one of my best buddies in this world of youth ministry and one of the great treasures in our youth ministry world. So, yeah, I'll never forget him saying that. What are you doing? My breakfast. What's wrong with that?
Well, I'm pretty sure I was probably in that first seminar that you taught back in 95. I didn't know you were doing it for free. I have a greater appreciation for it now.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, which probably I'm reading into it that you probably didn't think it was that good, but just because I did it for free. Now it's, no, I'm joking.
No, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, let me tell you something about those guys. You know, the way that Dad operated for years was, you know, you never knew if you were going to be asked back, and it's still that way. You know, year to year, you've got to be sharp. You've got to be on point. You've got to be talking about things that are relevant, ways that engage with youth workers. You know, and over time, they began to trust me more, and Tick would call, usually after the first of the year, and he would say, hey, we want to have you back. What do you want to speak on? And I'd say, well, give me a week or two, and let me brainstorm a little bit. Back when the music industry was more guided by record sales in, you know, in real brick and mortar shops, I was really tracking with the music industry pretty closely through CPYU. And those who have been with us for a long time remember that we did a little print magazine, and I'd do these long deconstructions of different bands and artists, and I'd go through every single song and their story and just, you know, what can we learn from these guys?
I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember the first year I pitched something to Tick, and I remember the silence on the other end of the phone, and I said, listen, Tick, I am really fascinated by this guy, Dave Matthews. He is getting traction in places that you just can't believe. His following is huge. I've been listening to his music like crazy. There's meaning in it. There's something behind it. What would you think if I did an entire seminar for youth workers on the Dave Matthews Band? And he said, you know, well, I'm not sure how that's going to work. Listen, if what I'm feeling or seeing is right, there could be a lot of people who are interested in this. And I said, the risk is we can have one person show up. So I'm talking to one person. And I still remember, I think we were in St. Louis. And that was the first time that I did this seminar. And I walked up the escalator to set up in the room. And I would get in there like a half an hour before just to make sure everything was working. And the room was already packed and there were people outside. And I thought, wow, that really showed me that we were, you know, we were onto something with the music and how the music was reflecting, you know, the spirit of the times. And people still come up to me and talk about that. That was 20 some years ago. And then I did other bands over the course of the time too. I can't remember who all I did, but
was that right at the top about the time that Gravedigger came out, that the album Gravedigger by Dave Matthews?
You know what, it probably was, because I think I remember showing that video. It was either in that seminar or maybe a couple of years later, but yeah, that was actually a fun and enlightening thing to do.
Look at you all culturally relevant over here.
I read everything you wrote on Gravedigger, man. That album was so rich, man.
You know, but I'll tell you this. You know, the crazy thing about it is the music industry right now is so all over the place because of the internet. Everybody just, you know, with all the independent musicians and, you know, YouTube and all the different outlets that are out there, I just can't keep up with it. I have to be very selective, you know, and you guys with your students, youth workers with students, if you ask your students to write down, you know, their top five, maybe top five artists, it would be all over the place. And that's not the way it was in the past. It was pretty much controlled by, you know, the commercial interests in the record industry. So it's more difficult for me to stay up with that now. I don't have the same kind of knowledge of the music industry that I used to have.
Oh, it's probably changed more than just about any other industry over the last 25 years, without question.
It's unbelievable, and yeah.
So my partner here is a huge Mike Iaconelli fan. He wants to know if you have any great stories from your days with YS and Mike Iaconelli.
I just told one the other day. Man, I hesitate to tell this one. Actually, you know, if you want a lot of the really good personal stories, you would have to talk to the guys who were on the one-day seminar team, you know, the core team, which I launched into later on. I think it was primarily after Mike was gone, because I just couldn't, you know, those guys were traveling 10, 15 weekends a year, and I was already with my CPYU work tied into that. It was difficult enough for me schedule-wise to get in to three or four conventions a year when they were doing three or four conventions a year. But I do remember, it was actually the year that Mike died. I think there were three or four conventions that year, and the first one was in Phoenix. And they did a, I won't go into names here, but they did a late night option that was to be kind of a debate or a discussion between four of us who were evaluating the world of music and media. And I took the position that it's not something we run from, but it's something we listen to and we embrace. And that was based on, you know, cross-cultural missions theory. It was based on what I read about Paul in Athens in Acts 17, the prayer of Jesus the night before he died in John 17, you know, the Christians are to be in, but not of the world. And so, you know, engage with music. So I had this, this was my position. I went in and there might have been 20 people who showed up for this thing. And I'll just tell you, it turned really ugly.
Really?
One person went on the attack. Primarily
from the audience.
What's that?
A person from the audience?
No. It was a person on the panel went on the attack. And I know what you're going to do now. When we're done here, you're going to go on the internet and try to figure this all out.
Yeah, Google this.
No, we're just going to ask you and just not put it in the podcast.
Yeah, well, this one person went on the attack. We had anticipated this because we were getting emails and things from this person. Can't wait to, I mean, they were just, it was just kind of in your face and tough. And it was disappointing because it could have been a very civil discussion, but it was rough. And I just remember walking back to the hotel from the convention center afterwards thinking, man, that was a disaster. You know, that's not the kind of conversation youth workers need to see. And the other three of us remained very calm, tried to reason with this person. We did not become adversarial at all in terms of our posture or our tone, but it was tough. And I was just like, man, I was talking to this other guy. I said, we don't need to do this anymore. This is not fruitful at all for anybody. Well, then we went to where were we? I think we're in Charlotte next. And they did it again. Word had spread.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
I don't know if people had listened to the tape or what had happened, but word had spread. We go into the room, and it was packed. I mean, all my buddies are in there. You know, Tick came in. Duffy and Maggie were there. Marv and Lois, Doug and Kathy. I think Chap came in. I remember looking back, the guys from Lost and Found were in there. I mean,
oh my goodness, yes. Lost and Found.
I bet the skit guys were. I mean, it was just like everybody was in there. And the two guys who had been pegged to moderate this discussion came in wearing referee shirts.
Oh my goodness.
So it was really set up. And the in the in-between time between the first one in Phoenix and this one, there were emails being sent to us by this one person who was adversarial. I won't even go into what they were all about, but I was just anticipating the worst. And that particular night, I was the one who was the object of the attacks because of my approach to engage the culture. And fortunately, you know, the Lord was good to me and allowed me to remain calm and reason well and, you know, keep my cool. Glad I wasn't in high school because it would have gotten ugly. I mean, I really felt bad for the person who was being adversarial because they were not helping their cause at all. When that night was over, this is a story about Iaconelli. So we were supposed to go to St. Louis and do it the next one. Iaconelli went to Tick, as the story goes, and said, don't do that again. And that's just the adversarial person. We just can't do this again. And I know he stated it stronger than that because I heard how it was stated and only as Iaconelli can. Unfortunately, then between that convention and St. Louis, that's when Iaconelli died.
Oh.
And but we did not do that in St. Louis, and it was a blessing to say the least. You know, that was the way Mike was. I mean, he wasn't afraid to, as you know, call anybody out on anything. And, you know, my thing during that was, you know, just, I was just praying, Lord, give me grace here. Give me the ability to hear clearly and not get emotional about this. But yeah, that was tough. Were either of you guys there for that? Do you remember that? Or
no. I remember hearing about it, but I don't think I was there.
Did you do some boxing training prior to that last session?
Well, I had done that.
Get in the gym, take a few rounds.
Let me just say my dad taught me all that, but I was not going to engage in that. That was part of my problem when I was younger. And bit of a anger issue that the Lord dealt with when I was in college. So, you know, I mean, since then I've been blessed to be able to remain fairly calm, but it's actually the fact that you said that, Steve, I mean, I will tell you that there was actually some concern on some of our parts. It might come to that based on some of the things we were hearing, and it was just bad, but it was quite entertaining.
I'm sure
people were there. So,
what were some of the biggest challenges in getting CPYU off the ground?
I'll tell you what the biggest challenge was, because I think everything went very smoothly once I made up my mind that I knew that this is what God was calling me to. The biggest challenge was I had raised my hand early on, so to speak, and said, hey, I'm going to be in youth ministry, local church for the rest of my life. And when I started to sense this call, to me, I pushed back. I really fought it because I knew it wasn't in the local church. I knew if I did this, I was not going to be ministering to the same group of students week after week after week. Mm-hmm. And I loved the students I was with. I loved the size of our youth group. You know, we had maybe 40, 50 kids in each middle school and high school. To me, that was manageable. I had a great group of volunteers. We had deep relationships. The friendships were off the charts. I just loved that about youth ministry. I'm not a bigger and better guy. I really think depth is important. So there was a year there, once I started to sense the call, to when I said yes to it. And that was the biggest challenge, because that was when Lisa, my wife, who, and I point back to this all the time, just said, you know, what are you going to do? How long are you going to drag your feet on this? Isn't it clear that God is calling you to this? You know, I've been really blessed with a wife who all along the way has just affirmed what I've been called to, and when need be has challenged me when maybe some of my personal habits or time management, you know, maybe get a little bit outside the boundaries of where they should be. So that was the biggest challenge. Once we said yes, I mean, people said to me, aren't you worried about raising money? Because it's all been donor, you know, 30 years we've been supported by donors. You know, I have a salary that's drawn from that. And there have been about three or four times over the years where it's been close to dry. Like we had enough money to fund us for one more day, maybe. But God has always come through, and I've never really fretted about that. That's a blessing and a gift, I think. But God's always provided. So that it was that jumping into, you know, and I think too, you know, a thing I would say to younger youth workers is when we started, there was no internet and you could not self-promote. And I'm glad that temptation was not there. Now you have the internet and everybody is tempted because of the brokenness in our own hearts. It's nobody's immune from this, to want to make a name for themselves, to want to be a leader in youth ministry, to, you know, anybody can start a blog, start a podcast, generate followers, do a YouTube channel, but not everybody's called to do that. And I think that's one of the greatest tools in the enemy's, you know, tool belt, is to get us off point by wanting to make a name for ourselves and wanting to lead. I love my buddy Rich Van Pelt, when he a few years ago got his, what did they call it, a Lifetime Achievement Award at Youth Workers Convention, Mark Matlock turned to him, great question, and said, you know, is there one bit of advice you could give to youth workers here? And Rich, without hesitation, said, it's the one bit of advice somebody gave me when I was starting out. It's this: you take care of the depth of your ministry, let God take care of the breadth of your ministry. And we've really worked hard to hold to that here. And that's not to say that the temptations have not been there to want to go wider rather than deeper, but we've really worked hard here to be committed to depth and excellence and integrity. So hopefully we've done that. I hope
that,
we
That's a good word to us too.
Absolutely.
As we try to build this platform as well. So thank you for telling.
And you know, I do want to say this. I mean, I think there's a responsibility. We've had to balance this. When you're doing something that God has called you to, that you truly believe is worthwhile, it's not wise to put a, you know, like a basket or a bucket over it to hide it. I think you need to let people know what you're doing, but it's just striking that right balance between under-promising and over-delivering as opposed to over-promising and under-delivering, or creating a facade for who you are and what you're doing and perhaps some expertise you don't have that you're putting out there just to feed your ego. That's a balancing act, but that's been a big lesson I've learned and I've been learning over the years.
Where did that calling come from? How did you sense that in your heart, in your life?
You mean to do what we're doing now with CPYU?
Yes.
Well, when those parents asked me, can you help us understand our kids? The way we did that was I actually started a 12-week, you know, Sunday morning class for parents at our church. I'd never done anything like that before. And I, you know, had to ask them, you know, okay, you want to know about their world. What do you want to know about? Let's say, well, tell us about their music and media. Tell us about peer pressure. You know, tell us about the substance, the world of substance abuse. Tell us what they think about their money. And so what I did was I came pretty easy. I jotted down, you know, if I'm going to teach a 12-week class, what are the topics I'm going to cover? And then I went and every week I had my volunteers run the ministry while I spent all my time researching to get ready for that class. I really enjoyed that. I saw the value of it. So that fed a calling as I look back. But what really fed it was, you know, my experience had been that when you start something, people are usually excited about it in the beginning and then the attendance dwindles, you know, and the room gets smaller and smaller. You might need to move to another room or set up like this. This thing grew week by week where we're moving room to room. And eventually, like, I was blown away. We had people coming from other churches just for this class and they'd go back to their, because they heard about it, you know, from their friends who were from our church. These other parents would come. And I remember saying to Lisa, this is not due to me and any ability I have. This is the topic. And there is a real need here. So I thought, okay, could God be calling us to this? Now that's when I get very hesitant, because when I started to realize, yes, that's when I got a little nervous. I'll tell you what I did. I went and I wrote down, I sat one day, I still have this document, 2 pages, an organizational overview. Here's what it is. Here's what the mission is. Here's how it's funded. Here's how it's going to be governed. I sent that to about 12 people I knew around the country who were involved in ministries of some level. Some of them were very well-known people that I had encountered across the years. They knew me. And I said, hey, 2 questions. Do you think, read this paper. I sent them the paper. I said, read this. Tell me if you think something like this is necessary. And if you answer yes to that, tell me, knowing what you know about me, if God might be calling me to be the person to start this. And they all wrote back and said, or called back and said, yes, yes. So now I'm really starting to sweat. So then I took it to 12 people who were people I knew who were close friends, because I couldn't do this alone. And I said to them, same 2 questions. You think there's a need for this too? Do you think I'm a person who God might be calling, gifted ability-wise to do this? And the 3rd question is, if you say yes to the first 2, would you be willing to be on a board to govern this? Because I don't want to vote. I need to be under accountability. And all but 1 came back and said, yes, yes, yes. And the one who said no at the end came back a year later and said, I was wrong. I really think, you know, this needed to happen and you were called to do this. So
that wasn't your wife, was it?
No. No, it's actually a voice in my head. It was just another friend in youth ministry. And, you know, to his credit, he came back. And, you know, so, you know, from the get-go, I wanted the responsibility to do what I was called to do. But I started doing a lot of questioning about control, because I knew money was going to be involved, other people's money. I knew there had to be good accountability. I knew I needed accountability. So from the start, you know, I didn't want to vote on the board because I knew that could be dangerous. I just wanted to put myself under the governance of everybody. And so the real miracle in all this is we've gone 30 years and I haven't gotten fired yet by our board. So, and they can do that. We're meeting tonight Our board's meeting tonight, so I might not be here tomorrow. I don't know. I don't have a fear of that, but yeah.
I think there's some good principles in there that transfer into even into youth ministry in the local church.
Oh, yeah. And this is where I think we need to know our tendencies. I think, you know, I think sometimes the younger we are, I think we tend to, and this is not everybody, but I think we tend to have a higher view of ourselves than we ought. I don't think we understand our sin nature really well yet. I think we have the power and ability in ourselves to overcome that. I think we can do better than we actually can. All that comes together, and that leads to pride and arrogance, and that's just, that is just a quick path to a destiny that's disastrous. Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you this. I did ask some guys who had been in youth ministry for decades, and you would know some of their names. You know, as you look back over the course of your life in ministry, what have you done right? What have you done wrong? And consistently what came back that was done wrong was lack of accountability, arrogance, and poor use of time, to the point where many of them had destroyed their marriages and their families. Mm. And so and that's why I asked that question. I wanted to know what to pursue and what to avoid. Mm. And so this is where I think, you know, in today's world, culturally speaking, this generational snobbery that's out there where generations think they're better than others. And I see this, I mean, I'll say this, it's not because I'm older. I think young people are increasingly being nurtured into the belief that anybody who's older has nothing to say to them that's of value because it's old, irrelevant, and out of date. And I've heard that. I mean, I've heard it stated that way. And I got to have older guys around me, and older men, older women, and, you know, people I learn from who are dead. You know, I read them like crazy. So, yeah, that's a gift.
Mm-hmm. With that being said, who are some of your mentors, like in youth ministry world?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you know, my best buddies, really, the guys that I will tell you I spend the most time with, multiple weekends and even multiple weeks a year. So my peers in youth ministry, I would say Duffy Robbins and Marv Penner up there, we talk a lot. You know, there's probably not a week that goes by that we're not chatting on the phone or, you know, with each other somewhere. And our wives know each other. They love each other. So that's great. None of the wives are impressed with us, which is, that's actually the best thing because you don't want that. You know, that's a great gift too. You have a wife who loves you, but is not impressed with you.
That is gold right there.
Ministry. Yeah, that's the key, you know, so probably making you guys feel a little bit better about your marriages right now. Yeah, so those guys, but I'll tell you, like some of the folks that I read now, I'm trying to be drawn to people who have solid theology because there's so much sketchy stuff out there that I know I have to stay tethered. So, you know, I've been reading people like Tim Keller, David Wells, the theologian David Wells, who I've gotten to know, who is from Gordon Conwell, who's just a brilliant critic of culture. I read everything that he writes, and he's getting older, so he's writing a lot less. The Puritans, I know this sounds absurd to people, but don't count it off as absurd until you go check them out. You know, read them, because you want content for youth talks where you're throwing good theology out there in front of kids. You want to read things that change you. The Puritans are amazing. I've been reading, one of the women I've been reading lately is Elizabeth Elliot, who was a great Bible teacher. I've been reading some stuff by Nancy Guthrie, who is a great Bible teacher. I've really appreciated Nancy Guthrie recently. Yeah, those are some of the folks who have been extremely helpful to me. This is probably a bad thing to say, but this is a bent of mine, and there's probably a little bit of pride here, but I really try to avoid things that are frothy and maybe on the bestseller lists. And I admit that I may be missing some very good things there, but yeah.
Yeah, that's a good word. I'm always telling other youth workers, read stuff besides the latest youth ministry books. Read stuff that has nothing to do with youth ministry at all, nothing to do with church at all.
Yeah.
Learn from reading multiple sources.
Yeah. We can have in youth ministry, we can have the greatest innate skills and abilities. We can, you know, go to the sources to find the greatest resources that will draw kids in. But
there's more than ever.
Yeah. But the most important thing is just you know, who we are theologically and who we are in our relationship with Christ, and constantly, you know, what I would say is going deeper, 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 and have your stake in the ground. And don't wander. I'm warning youth workers all the time, because I track with everything that's out there. To me, there's some horrifying stuff, because the fruit of that is we're going to see it. And I think we're seeing it now, but it's troubling to me.
Hmm.
I got grandkids. I got 5 little grandkids. It's really troubling to me, because I want them to be nurtured well.
Have there been seasons, Walt, where your research has led you down a trail of discouragement?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I will tell you, I'd probably say the 2 darkest times I've had. One was the first time I wrote Understanding Today's Youth Culture. I spent probably 2 to 3 months working on the chapter just on music and media, and it was pulling together things that I had already researched, doing some more research. Man, when I was done with that, it was, I can't describe it. It was rough.
Mm-hmm.
Spiritually, it was really, really rough. And I'm grateful for that, you know, in hindsight, because it helped me see, as someone with my guard up, what that can do to you. And it made me think about our kids. And when they don't have their guard up, what is it doing to them? You know, when it just becomes normalized. And then I think the other time was related to music and media. You guys may remember this. I did a rather lengthy piece and bit of research on Marilyn Manson, who was born Brian Warner, and was fascinated by his story and his music. His life was very dark. And his music was very dark. And I really got into that to hear the story. And there's a lot that happened, you know, out of that in the wake of that I think was valuable and fruitful. But that was tough. That was a tough period too.
The flip side though is that by staying in this for so long, continuing to do this, it's kind of eliminated the need to be alarmist about stuff too. Like the person that you encountered at the conference years ago.
Yeah.
Because things do come and go. We freak out about the latest thing, but they come and go.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, there's still a part of me that's a bit alarmist. And it really has little or nothing to do with what's happening in the culture, but it has everything to do with how the culture is impacting the church.
Hmm.
And especially in our youth ministry world, there's a lot right now that I lament and that is deeply troubling to me. I mean, you can ask about that if you want, but that's what really is troubling to me now. And I people have come to me and said, okay, I see, you know, they're picking up on a bit of a shift in the kinds of things that I'm talking about and the kinds of warnings that I'm giving. You know, when I first started to talk about youth culture, like I do those, the critical concerns classes, you know, for 8 hours on the front end of a youth specialties convention.
Right. Yep, been there.
Yeah, okay. And I can still remember, you know, I'd have like, you know, overheads because nobody had a computer. And I had this big case with all these videotapes queued up, and I'd show stuff, we'd deconstruct stuff. And I remember people protesting, you know, why are you showing us this? Just keep with me. There's a reason for this. Let's look at this biblically. Let's look at what Paul did in Athens. Let's think about cross-cultural missions theory. So early on, the pushback when I did what I'm doing was from people in the church who tended to be more on the alarmist side, or go, what, wait a minute, you're telling us we should do this? Yes, yes. And now the pendulum has swung to the other side. And my pushback on people and my convincing is in response to the world and the church, the culture and the church. Hmm. Because I think we're not thinking about what we've absorbed, what that means for kids. And even at the level of our forms, you know, just our youth rooms, they become performance halls rather than places where true fellowship takes place. And I always wonder, what are we nurturing our kids into with that? Mm-hmm. And what are we nurturing them out of with that? So hoping to do a podcast on that soon with a guy who's an expert on church architecture and sacred space.
Ah. Interesting.
So, yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. It's probably not going to win me a whole lot of friends.
Yeah, that's all right. I'll listen. Yeah. You invited the question, and it was actually a question on our list. So and to ask you about that. So based on your research and your involvement in the culture, youth culture, and how it's, you know, affecting the church and the youth and the student ministry,
What do you feel like most youth pastors or youth workers, what do you feel that they're focusing on that they shouldn't? And what are they not focusing on that they should?
Well, this world that we live in right now is really about sort of the veneer, you know, the forms. What do we look like? Are we, you know, is the mood right? Is the paint right? Is the fog machine spewing enough smoke? Is the lighting good? You know, we curate ourselves on social media. That's epidemic, which undermines Christian community and fellowship because we're not being virtuous. We're lying about ourselves, which undermines our ability to really be with each other. And we're all prone to that. I mean, I struggle with that. And Steve's heard me talk about social media borders and boundaries before. So I think we're focusing on forms rather than content. And when we do that, we're not really nurturing ourselves. We can give kids a place that maybe feels relevant to them, but I don't think we're really taking kids deep. And I think this has been feeding the issue that led us to start a college transition initiative here, where you guys have seen this. Christian parents have lamented this. Youth workers have lamented this. Kids get out of youth group, out of their Christian family. They go off to college, push the pause button, push the stop button on the faith, because it really hasn't gripped them. It hasn't meant anything to them. I think in many ways it's been a diversion or it's been entertainment. So I think we really need to be focusing on teaching and teaching out of our own passion and the depth of our wells. There's nothing wrong with using curriculum. There's nothing wrong with using, you know, because we all do it. There are things that others have put together that we can use. But if you're just doing that exclusively and you're not teaching out of the growing depth of your own spiritual life, and your passion won't be there. And kids pick up on that. You know, if you're not passionate about what you're doing, it's not coming out of you. So I think that's the big thing. You know, focus more on going deep rather than on, you know, size and width and having the right setting for everything. And I think an outcome of that has been, and I'll get really specific here, that we have lost our ability to maintain in youth ministry the balance between truth and grace. And I think what we've done is we've moved more to grace and a Jesus who loves in ways that doesn't include the kind of love that we all need. And that's the kind of love that says, I'm going to love you enough to tell you the truth, even when it hurts, and confront the things in your life that are undermining your flourishing and your growth. We've created a Jesus that's just this ooey gooey Jesus of love rather than, you know, all void of the holiness, you know, the holiness of God. And I think where we're really seeing that right now, where it's really dangerous, is in relationship to matters of sexuality and gender. That's a tough world for kids right now. And it's not that we wag our finger at kids who are struggling with this, because the struggle is very real for many. It's that we embrace them and we love them and we tell them the truth in the hope that God's Spirit will use that, and that will lead to their flourishing and their understanding their full humanity. And one of the things I see happening, to get specific, I just had this conversation last week, is many of the folks who are promoting an ethic on sexuality and gender that's much more affirming, you know, like kind of like whatever, you know, if that's what you're feeling, you know, go for it. Those folks aren't going back to Genesis. And I think everything in life, we have to go back to Genesis 1 and 2 to understand God's order and design and what it means to seek shalom, which is universal flourishing, the way things are supposed to be. And that's where I really push people to think theologically. And I get, when I talk about this now, this is increasingly more and more confrontational, I think, and people get upset about this. But, you know, there's sin issues in my life. You know, we all have these things. And this is not to say this area of sexuality and gender is worse than any other. It's not. We all have these things. And I'm just afraid right now we're putting a stamp on this and encouraging kids to go down roads that are not leading to life. You know, I really believe that that's what we need to be teaching.
What's something that you're really encouraged about for the state of youth ministry right now?
I think the camaraderie and the support that's there among youth workers, the fact that youth workers are able to be resourced in some big ways, both through, you know, resources that we can access on the internet, having conversations like you guys with your podcast and us with ours, we're able to have with youth workers almost in real time. The way that technology has enabled us to become, I think, more of a tribe where we can encourage each other. I'm really excited about that. And I am excited as well that there are in our youth ministry world some movements right now that are rising up that are all about going back and starting first with the scriptures and then looking at how we can best communicate the scriptures to students.
What has been one of your highlights in your career with CPYU?
Well, I'll tell you, the biggest one is when people started to get what we do. That was awesome. Because we labor in obscurity here. You know, I mean, we're not out with people all the time. And our team here, which is small, they don't get to interact with people the way I do. I know my wife gets out there from time to time.
Elizabethtown is the epicenter of youth ministry, Walt.
Yeah, really.
It's where it all started for me. So it's got to be the center of the universe.
So that's two of us, right? I just think, you know, when people started to get it, that was a big deal. But I think there's been, you know, along the way, there's been some fun moments for me that I'm trying to remember right now. If you want to hear about some of them, I got to have dinner in the White House. That was pretty amazing. And I was part of a day-long conference at the Department of Justice on mentoring youth. And this was when the younger George Bush was in office, and George and Laura Bush hosted that. And they took us all back to the White House for dinner. We had to run out of the place except for the second floor. I spent my time going around. This is true youth ministry, right? I spent my time, because I remember visiting the White House when I was a little boy, probably 1962. I was probably 6 years old. Kennedy was in office. It was before he was assassinated. And I remember walking through the main hall, but everything was blocked off by those red velvet ropes. So I couldn't, there was nothing. You just looked. I went around and I literally sat in every chair, touched everything I could touch. I loaded my pockets with cookies to bring home, napkins. I didn't take silverware, thought about it.
You would have taken selfies if you'd had the camera, right?
Well, I did. We did take some pictures. I'll tell you who was there with me. It was Doug Tegner. I don't know if you know Doug, who was with the National Network for Youth Ministries at the time. So we kind of hooked up and we were there together. And we were like two little kids in a candy shop. I mean, it was hilarious. You know, I go behind curtains, get on my phone and call my son and go, guess where I am now? And I'm thinking the Secret Service is listening to this whole thing. So that was really fun. That was a fun thing to do. I've gotten to meet some very interesting people. One day of the MTV Video Music Awards, this was years ago, went up to New York City to be part of an interview on one of the nationally syndicated shows, and spent the morning with the guys from Blink 182, who you don't hear about much anymore. But, you know, people like that who you get to meet and you get to talk to. Are you guys college basketball fans? Or
oh, yeah.
Remember Quinn Buckner?
Oh, yes. Sure.
Quinn Buckner. So I used to get asked every year to go speak to the Indiana Youth Institute, who had a big convention in Indianapolis. And that was a coat and tie, you know, affair. And I was sitting at the big banquet, about 1,000 people at a table with a bunch of the big wigs from the Lilly Foundation. And Quinn Buckner was across from me. You know, I'm sitting there just going, this is surreal. And once the opening prayer was done, you know, all the waiters and waitresses come out with their trays, you know, stacked high with these meals with those aluminum covers. Gal comes around the corner behind me, her tray tip, and I had about 15 plates of food just cover me.
Oh, no.
The first person to jump up and scream, get a towel for this gentleman, was Quinn Buckner. He's wiping me down. He goes, are you okay? I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I said, you know what's great about this? I said, someday I'm going to be able to tell somebody Quinn Buckner toweled all the food off of me when I was this is that day, right? You know, stuff like that, the people you meet highlights. But I think overall, knowing that what we do has served parents and served youth workers in some way, and we don't even know, you know, someone walked up to me last week at a conference and said, I guess you'll find out when all is said and done what it is that you've said and done. And I said, well, what do you mean? You know, you just don't know. I mean, it's the same, every youth worker, it's the same thing. You just don't know how God has used you. So that's a bit of an encouragement. And I think that's what excites me.
Well, as you look back now, coming up on the 30th anniversary, that you're going to celebrate. Have you ever stopped to think about the role of CPYU in the annals of youth ministry history and its role?
No, not really. You know, to be honest, you know, the fact that you guys want to do a podcast like this and you go, we're talking to legends, I'm going, man, that is just bizarro. You know, it's, I don't really think about that, you know, which now that you're making me think about it, I got to go take a shower probably, you know. I haven't, to be honest with you. You know, I hope we've served people well. And I know that, you know, to use the old cliche, for such a time as this, I know that we were called to do this. And I hope that, you know, we've done a good job and we've been faithful at it. I hope to continue on to do a good job and be faithful at it, because I don't think we're done yet. Mm. It's more necessary now, what we do here, than it's ever been. And I really pray that youth workers would catch a vision for this, and they'd be doing this in their particular situation where they're at.
For the younger youth workers out there who may not even be familiar with what you guys do, what are some of the resources they can draw from, and how can you help them?
CPYU.org, just go there. That's the gateway to everything. And there's much more. There's like 30 years worth of stuff on there, so I have no clue what's on there. Everything we've talked about here, I think you could search for and go back and find that in the archives. We've got 3 websites we've birthed off that, which we hope will serve youth workers and families well: our College Transition Initiative, our Sexual Integrity Initiative, and our Digital Kids Initiative. If you scroll down to the bottom of the page at cpyu.org, you'll see links to those. I've got a blog that's on there on the front page, but we actually are doing 2 podcasts now. One is a podcast that's been around for 15 years before podcasting. It was our daily radio show that you can now push, you know, you can subscribe to through wherever you get podcasts. It's called Youth Culture Today. And that's on well over 800 stations around North America here on a daily 1-minute radio spot on youth culture. But you can now listen to it as a podcast. And then we do one called Youth Culture Matters, which is a long form podcast, which you can also subscribe to or find on our website.
Awesome. Well, I mean, you say you hope you've served well. You have.
Thank you.
Who have been tracking with it for almost all 30 years. Yeah, you have. Well,
thank you for allowing me to be a part of this. I've tracked with you guys for a while. And, you know, now that I've been on the podcast, I'm going to get my sticker out.
There you go. There you go.
That back from my grandson.
All right.
Cool.
All right. Thanks.
This has been great, Walt. Thank you so much for your time.
I hope it's helpful.
What a great conversation with Walt. He's such a good guy.
He is. He's got so much wisdom to share. It's incredible to think that CPYU started pre-internet.
So one of the things coming out of this conversation was just a reminder of how valuable of a resource is just at your fingertips, whether you're on your phone or your computer, www.cpyu.org, and you have an unbelievable amount of research at your fingertips to make you seem much smarter than you are. And in youth ministry, that is always a win. So once again, we want to thank Walt Mueller for his time today, which I know is very valuable in talking with us and just sharing his story and his wisdom. And hopefully it was very encouraging to you.
You can check our show notes for links to all of the resources at CPYU, including information about their podcast, as well as their various endeavors. There's one on sexuality. There's one on digital initiatives and different things that would be really helpful to you as a youth worker, as well as to parents in your church that may be coming to you looking for some answers. They're right there at your fingertips through CPYU.
We look forward to being back next month with a new Sherpa legend. Until then,
Sherpas out.